I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance, or don't understand the differences between insurance plans, or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, my returning guest is Sherry Jacobus. There's lots and lots and lots of chaos and craziness to discuss, and we will. But before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal, where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Sherry Jacobus. Welcome back to the show, Sherry.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always good to be back with you.
Yes, it is. And finally, I have been talking about politics. So, last
time
you were here,
I
know. Last time you were here, I was still in my, I'm a little nervous. And actually, I'm going to ask you about talking about it. But before we get into politics, of course, this is us. So we have to talk about, and just like that, Sex and the City, because there's always so many opinions. Before we get into what you think of it, I want to say, Bob and I continue to hate love watch it. And I know there Bob had sent me an article, and I believe it was the Huffington Post, and it was somebody who was just so over Carrie. And it's funny because I saw an interview with Sarah Jessica Parker, and she's getting a lot of criticism. And I mean, I will criticize her, but I still love the show. So it's not coming out of, actual hate. It's just, I get really irritated. So anyway, she was defending Carrie, and she was saying something like, well, men get to be serial killers and everybody loves them. And it's like, okay, but they're serial killers. That's how, that's what we expect of them. We know that they're a serial killer, and that's what we expect. Carrie was not a serial killer. Carrie was just a regular person. And it was the way she treated her friends and all that stuff that sometimes people said she was really annoying. But this new, I don't even want to call it season, like this new part of the show, and just like that, It is so perplexing to me. And I know some of the things you're going to say, but I mean, some of the, they don't, you know, it's like Carrie was afraid to say vagina, or she didn't want to say vagina on her podcast about sex because she was such a prude. And it's like, what are you talking? Like, did the writers even understand what she does for a living? I just don't get it. So there's all kinds of issues from her clothes. Oh, yeah. From her like privileged entitlement. So I know you have some specific problems and I want you to voice them.
Yeah, I should tell your audience that you and I've gone back and forth. Like it'll be late one night and you'll get like this long message from me saying, I just saw this video. Yeah, we'd like to talk about this. A couple of things. I think the writers, and I knew one of the writers in the first season of And Just Like That, and she's no longer there. I think it's, the show's gotten worse. The new characters don't resonate with us because they aren't part of the old set. I know they were trying to include more people of color and everything, but there's a way to do it that feels more organic, I guess.
Right.
And it just didn't. Is that a criticism or not? I mean, good for them for the effort, but I'm just not getting into the new characters. And I miss Samantha, but a couple of things. Miranda, and this was something that I saw somebody did a video on this, and I believe, and this is how I feel. Miranda has changed so much. And it's not just that she's decided that she's a lesbian. Her personality has changed.
Yes.
In this video, they noted that she went all through. She was this made partner, this powerhouse of an attorney, confident. She'd tell anybody off. That was almost like too much. And now she's this meek little thing who's trying so hard, doesn't know what to say. And also, she drank her way through her 20s and 30s and 40s and did just fine. These girls partied. They had their Cosmopolitans. And all of a sudden now, she's suddenly an alcoholic. And it happened in like 2 weeks. You know, and these things just don't make any sense. Now, with regard to the vagina thing, I'm going to disagree with you. I think that the podcast was probably wrong. And remember, it wasn't really hers. Mm-hmm. She was playing off Che. Mm-hmm. Carrie, when she had her, you know, the Sex and the City column that she had I guess it was supposed to be like a
Che
New York
wasn't post. There. Che, what that the whole vagina thing when it was just her.
Oh. Her previous persona, she talked about sex and dating. It was not like pornographic and she wasn't using a whole lot of those words. So I think that is
consistent
with her.
But vagina's just a body part. It's just a body part.
But for her to not say it, you know, I think was fine for her. Now, I have a problem with, I'm going to kind of jumping all over the place. I don't think these women look good, and it's not because they've aged. I think they've leaned in. This is what I said to you. They have leaned in too far to the, it's okay to age. The women living in New York with their resources, and when you look at the very expensive clothing, which still is not realistic for New York. I lived in New York for over 3 years. It seems like they've kind of gone into this fashion porn thing. Carrie liked to dress creatively, but leaning in too much into the very expensive wardrobe makes her not seem, it's not realistic. Mm-hmm. These women, if they were true, just not even as wealthy as they are, they would probably be getting teeth whitening, at least some face peels, maybe some Botox. I don't know. I think that they are leaning too far into the aging thing. It's almost like they are purposely trying to make them look older, even with the lighting.
Charlotte did get a facelift, the actress. And that was evident. That was evident on the very first season of And Just Like That. And it's calmed down. Her facelift has absolutely calmed down. But
I mean, she just looked a little puffy, maybe from fillers or something.
I'm sure she has fillers too. And, you know, but with I will say about Sarah Jessica, she does not appear to have any work done. And I think that's the actress's
I think she's had fillers I think she's had fillers under the eyes like Melania has done. And that's what gives it that kind of squinty look. And that was a long time ago.
Right. But if you look, I mean, she's got typical aging lines on her face.
Yeah.
I did see a flattering article or video or whatever it was talking about her hair and the hair of the women, because they're saying, you know, just because you get older, it doesn't mean you have to have shorter hair. I know that my face looks better, and it always has, even when I was younger, with a little bit shorter, not short hair, but like maybe shoulder length or a little longer.
Yeah, to frame your face.
Yeah, and I mean, I have it longer.
Carrie's hair is ridiculous, I think. She's got a long, thin face and a prominent nose. And this was even in the first in series when they straightened it, I don't think it flatters her face. Jessica Parker's face looks more balanced and fresh and young and beautiful when she's got those curls, you know, those golden
the
curls.
Big mane,
and they could even
yeah.
they could even mix some of the gray in it. Mm-hmm. It's just more flattering. Her look now is so severe and so drawn. And I think initially they were doing that because she was grieving, and I would see them kind of loosen up some of it. But it's all just too much. And all the layers she wears, it's just, none of it's realistic. And people wearing stiletto heels running around in their home when they're at home, doesn't make sense.
And then the ridiculous story with Aiden. And
yeah, that's not
idea,
realistic.
Yeah, the idea
they're
that
trying too hard, aren't they? They're trying too hard to get something back from the old series, and they're missing the mark.
They're missing it. And the thing is it's his son, that his son is in, you know, trouble and having problems. So it's this whole thing of, I have to go back because she's in New York. Aiden's like, I have to go back and live in Virginia for 5 years. And Carrie doesn't even know if she can contact him. Like, what the fuck is that? You would at least set some, okay, here's what we're going to do. And of course they're going to and he wants her to wait for 5 years, what, with no contact? And she's not sure what to do. It makes no sense.
There's a mother in the picture. Can't she take her own son for a couple of days every couple of weeks so he can go visit Carrie in New York? Yeah.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb. I can't even believe how dumb it is. Yet I still watch it.
I watch it because I'm nostalgic for how they used to be. They've made Charlotte a caricature of herself.
Yes. She's ridiculous.
Just because she's a mom now, they've turned her into like a cartoon, and she's not interesting. She used to be someone with depth and layers, and you could tell. With dating with different men, with friends, you know, the thing with her brother, how she struggled with the career stuff. What should I do? You know, body image, normal things. When she was happy, sometimes she was the happier, more optimistic one. And now she's just a cartoon. They don't know what to do with her. So, and they've made her and Harry just seem silly and old. And here's the other thing that somebody noted in one of these videos that I'm watching as I watch videos analyzing the show. I come across them. And so then once you watch one, they all keep popping up and then you keep watching them.
Exactly.
They noted, aside from the fact that, how did Miranda, who's been, you know, party and drank at the career for all these decades, and all of a sudden she's an alcoholic and you know, can't handle herself in the job and how to deal with people. They noted this stuff about Carrie and about Charlotte, and they're like, but the leaning into the old thing, you know, Carrie having hip replacement surgery in her 50s. I mean, I'll probably have to have it in my 70s.
Well, but, two of my friends in their 50s, who are, one is 2 years older, one is 1 year younger. Two friends I know have had both hips replaced in their 50s. So that is, it could be.
So they do have it, but I do think that they're leaning into the age thing a little bit too much. And what this person noted was that, you know, Samantha Jones was older than these girls.
Yeah.
She was in her 50s
right.
when the show was still sexy and cool, and she looked good and she accepted her age, and you know, she got the designer reading glasses, but she was still a sexy, vibrant, modern woman and confident. And these women now reach the age that Samantha was then, and there's like all of these changes that they, well, this is just the inevitable changes with age. And I'm like, yes, but also no. I mean, I'm older than that than them. I mean, I'm kind of in that age range, but a few years older, and you know, I get it. And like I said, they're just leaning into it, I think, too much. And that's what's not realistic to me.
I agree. Because the last show they had Harry, he was going to go to a nightclub and he didn't have a pair of jeans, which was odd since they're so wealthy. And then when he got jeans, he was walking like in a weird way as if the jeans were so tight. It's like, why don't you just buy jeans that fit? And it was like, he didn't. And then he wound up peeing himself because he couldn't get to the, I mean, it was like ridiculous. So
yeah, Bob, like, oh, I just discovered I have a prostate issue or
exactly.
something. I mean, it's just not realistic.
Like, I can't unbutton my pants fast enough. And, you know, Bob and I just sit there and scream at the TV, but we still watch it. So anyway, but
I will still watch it.
We can't help it. Let's
move
over.
Wait, what about the rats in the courtyard?
Oh, but my God.
She was sitting
insane.
In stiletto heels. Okay. She was sitting in stiletto heels while she was in the courtyard. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think what they're working up to, because she, and then I'll shut up about this. They have her staying in the guest room at Aiden's farm.
Right.
And, And then there's like this hot young new guy that's doing the garden. So clearly they're gearing up for her to have some wild sexual affair, you know, with him. Oh, and one more thing. I don't like how so soon after Big died, when she looks at Miranda on the street, she says, was Big just a big mistake because of Aiden? I thought, oh my God.
I know, that was dumb.
Yeah.
That was dumb. Anyway. It's like, what the hell is wrong with these writers? I don't know. Are they, I mean, did they ever watch the original show?
I don't think they did. I think they were too young. I think they were teenagers maybe when the first show was on. So they didn't really understand that they weren't, that wasn't their lived experience like it was for us.
Right.
And I think it shows.
It's just irritating, but whatever. So at least we got our Sex in the City. And just like that, we vented, our frustrations are out. You all know them now. All right, so I want to ask about something very specific here. I don't know if you happen to see that ad that was put out by, I don't know, it was some pack. And it was basically, you know, a woman and a man, and they're walking along, and all of a sudden these guys come up, and they're wearing masks, and they're dressed in black, and, you know, they're snatching them away. I just want to preface this by saying, number one, I did not watch the entire video, because it's very triggering and jarring for me. You know, I feel like, and I want you to kind of come in and defend it, really, because... And I'm not saying that ad shouldn't be. What I'm saying is, you know, I have an understanding of what's happening, a clear understanding. I can, you know, I have seen the videos of people being disappeared, of, you know, just ICE agents or whoever they are going up to people on the street, putting them in a vehicle, and then they're just gone. So I do understand that that's happening. Those videos are not targeting me. So for me, when I saw that video, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's very upsetting.
I've seen part of it.
Yeah, me too. So it's very upsetting. And the thing that concerns me about it, and I'm not, it's not a complaint, but it's, I guess, a fear, a concern, is that if we start seeing more of this and it's becoming something that we are getting used to, it's this is now part of American culture to see.
We're getting desensitized.
Yes. And so, I mean, I understand the benefit of the video for people who are not necessarily paying attention, but like everybody on Blue Sky, everybody who's still on Twitter, I think we all pretty much know what's going on. So I don't know, what do you, I mean, I said you can defend it, but what do you think about it?
I will kind of defend it. I did see something today that this is testing very high with young men. Men are alarmed by this.
Okay.
I think for us, because we are immersed in this and we spend our days doing this, it is hard for us because we are immersed in it 24/7 and we know what this is. So it's triggering. And we've talked before about in this stage of the fight, because things are more serious than they've ever been after all these years, you have to engage in some self-care and sometimes step aside.
Yeah.
And that might be what you're experiencing and what others who are immersed in this are experiencing. But powerful ads. Now, the thing is, is it just running on social media where you have people who are already plugged into this stuff and know what's happening? Or are they running it on TV? I haven't looked at that. And that's always been my question. You know, it was my question with the Lincoln Project and others. Where are you running these videos? Did you test them? Because Lincoln Project didn't test them. This one, apparently they did. Mm-hmm. And anytime you're doing an ad, by the way, a little bit of a sidebar for campaigns, because I've done this, I've hired ad guys, I've been involved in the process, I've written ads. You know, when you're doing it on a large scale like that, you test it. Mm-hmm. You have focus groups. And I've been involved in that process. And so, I end up writing one of the top national ads in a presidential year as a result of all this and my training in this. So if you're just putting videos on social media to preach to the choir who already agree with you, because then they open their wallets, you're not only not doing anything helpful, you're doing harm, because that money goes into the pockets of the generational wealth guys rather than electing Democrats. And I've said that before, they have the Democratic House majority sitting in their bank accounts. You have to run these ads on TV and reaching out to people, maybe on Facebook, people who are not immersed in it like we are. Most of my Facebook followers, friends, they're people from high school and college. Very few of them are actually on Twitter, let alone Blue Sky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some are little by little, but those are the people that you need to reach. I have high school friends who are big MAGA evangelicals that I unfriended. And so they try and send me private messages trying to get me to wake up to all this stuff, you know, those are the people that need to see the video that you're talking about. And if they are not airing it to that crowd, then it's kind of useless. Then right. it's triggering us. I'm fine with being triggered. I understand it. And I understand yes. that I have to engage in self-care and sometimes take a day off and just, you know, not look at this stuff, not think about this stuff. If I'm going to stay active and try and have a role in helping us get back to be a country that we need to be. But again, my problem is always, okay, I did hear they said it's testing it. So if they're testing it, maybe they are running it to right. this targeted audience, because as I say incessantly, and I used to say this when I used to teach in a master's program. I taught political communication strategy at the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University, 4 or 5 years, you know, you're right down the street from the White House. Close elections are won or lost in the margins. Mm-hmm. And if you're just playing to the people who already agree with you to fill your coffers, you're not playing in those margins.
Yeah.
We got to find those margins. They're still there, Kimberly. I know people say, well, if you voted for Trump at 2016, 2020, 2024, you're lost to us. You got to go. You spend the most money and the time and effort finding those people for that very slim margin. Because mm-hmm. as we know, that's where it goes. So people don't like that idea. And people will say, every single MAGA I know in my family, you can't change their mind. Well, that may or may not be true. Then we're not looking just at your family. Again, the numbers are so small that we're targeting. Mm-hmm. So this ad is very, very powerful if they are getting it in front of the people who need to see it.
Yeah.
It.
The totally agree with you.
People who are saying, I didn't vote for this. That said, I think a lot of MAGA did, in fact, vote for this.
Yeah.
They want illegals gone. What they don't want is war. What they don't want is high egg prices, grocery prices, high gas prices. What they don't want is losing their job and Social Security or Medicare, Medicaid being cut. I don't think this crowd, I hate to say this, but I've thought this for a while. We are doubling down on this because it feels right to those of us who have a heart and a soul and a brain mm-hmm. and think people need to care about this. But if they don't care about it, it's not going to help us politically. Mm-hmm. The same with the trans issue, the trans kids issue. You hate to see these kids being targeted, but the focus on it hurts the larger effort. So because the people that you want, whose minds you want to change, you're not going to change their minds. In fact, it makes them double down. MAGA successfully defined the Democratic Party by this stuff, and it's not the whole of everything. And so you have to make those hard choices. You don't want to abandon people, but we're not really doing anything to help them. We are, in fact, hurting trans kids when they are out there as the focus. And I don't know if this makes sense or not. So again, you have to find the issues that you can reach some of these people in the margins. You know, hold your nose, know that we still find them abhorrent and disgusting, but we have to win this thing. It's not about making us feel better. Mm-hmm. And it's a heart head thing. And I think too often Democrats lean into the heart, which is understandable, but you gotta be warriors. You have to be warriors. You have to, I own a copy of The Art of War. And you have to go with what works and extrapolate the issues that are going to reach those people in the margins and sway them. I'm not sure the issue of undocumented illegals, you know, being stuffed into vans is going to matter to them. This is what they voted for. I'm not sure that, you know, that trans kids not being able to get gender affirming surgery until they reach a certain age is really something that's going to move the needle. And the focus on it doesn't necessarily help trans kids. And that may sound harsh. I don't know if there's other ways we can help them, but I don't think what we're doing is getting the job done. It's making us feel better because we are focusing on issues that make us feel like good people. And we are good people.
Yeah, I think
be effective.
Yes. And the point obviously is that we want to win. And there is, I mean, there's even liberals, and I've seen them and I've heard them talking about the fact that they, you know, maybe they agree with some right wingers when it comes to trans youth. And maybe it's just because they don't fully understand and they're not interested in learning. You know, there, and I just want to kind of veer off a little bit. There's somebody that I know, I'm not going to get into the details, but as soon as Gavin Newsom, you know, started getting some, you know, the way he was communicating to everybody, his messaging on Trump was very positive. And, you know, people were upset with him for a long time because, you know, he was calling things a distraction. He called Garcia a distraction. He, I guess, people who are homeless, the way he's talked about the homeless, it, or at least the people who care about the homeless, felt offended by some of the things that he was saying. And then, you know, all of a sudden he is now praising, or I'm sorry, his messaging on what Trump is doing and everything that's happening is exactly what we need to hear. And so I think the point of all of this is that, yes, there are going to be certain topics and issues that are going to be winning for everybody, not everybody, but you know what I mean, for like the bigger picture. And it's my feeling that it's not so much that you have to ignore trans people, but I think that there, I think one of the things that the right is very good at is, maybe not lately, but what they used to be good at is just keeping things quiet. If they wanted to get rid of Roe, they weren't going to necessarily run on getting rid of Roe.
They were just going to win and then get rid of Roe.
Exactly.
Win on other issues. I see your point. I think we're agreeing with each other on this.
Yes, actually. We are. Because it's like, I totally get that, you know, we have to be vocal and stand up for each other. But when it's going to hurt us politically, even though it might be the right moral thing to do, we want to think about that and say, all right, well, we've got an agenda. We're going to pass bills that will protect trans youth. But if we campaign on that, it's going to piss off a certain sector of the ignorant public. And, you know, and when I say ignorant, it just means they're not necessarily informed. They don't have to be hateful.
Yeah. Well, it's about defining yourself and your opponent. I mean, you choose what to define yourself on. You don't let them do it. And Democrats let Republicans define the Democratic Party.
They do.
I'm so fucking tired of it. I mean, that's the first thing I do, like with a candidate when I teach a class. My very first class is just on research, gathering data, everything, even stuff you think aren't going to use. And I would make Republicans in the graduate school be Democrats and Democrats be Republicans to put them in the other person's shoes so that you are really a professional, so that when you're going into a campaign or doing an issue campaign and people are paying you, they're getting your best, not just, oh, I have a good heart and I'm going to be an activist. It's like, no, they're paying you to be a strategist. So you gather all the data, and I would pose questions to them. It was like, what if, now this was a number of years ago and this still mattered, but it still does in some Republican districts. What if, you come across information that the opponent might be gay. Mm-hmm. So we're talking research here, gathering all the raw data. And so some of the kids are like, how dare you? We would never use that. And I said, okay, here's the thing. We are not talking about using it, but you want to know that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, why would we want something like that? I said, because if you're able to get that information, that means other people have it, whether it's gossip in the town, reporters have it, and you are not going to address it with your candidate, put it in the whole packet and have these conversations. So your candidate is going to be out there and get caught with a question and not know how to respond. Mm-hmm. And if they had time to think about it, they might say, I don't really care about that, and I will never bring that up, nor should you, and then never say anything about it. They need to have that choice. And if their choice is to double down and use it, then you might want to consider whether you want to be a part of that campaign. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about gathering all the data, because then the picture starts forming. And part of that data, Kimberly, is polling, and you know what's going to poll well. And so there might be 12 big issues that are important to your candidate. And there might be three, you don't want to run more on three, that are actually easier to explain, easier to run on, and that you kind of extrapolate to pull the whole thing up and define the campaign by that. And Republicans do know that, because I was a Republican when I went to the American Campaign Academy, a 10-week boot camp, full time, you know, out in a warehouse in Virginia that Newt had it funded, where, I mean, we learned this stuff. I mean, and we were like guerrilla warfare going out there into the field running these campaigns. So it is a science. You have to have more than just heart. And we were heavily trained to do it. I don't see Democrats doing that. I am particularly incensed that they are not having daily briefings that I brought up, endorsed by Mark Cuban. There's no reason not to. I could have this up and running in 4 days. I suggested Pete Buttigieg. How do you pronounce his last name?
Buttigieg.
As the lead. I think that would be upsetting to other 2028 hopefuls, because, you know, it would give him a big platform. Mm-hmm. But you need something on par with the daily White House press briefing that's going to make it into the same news cycle where it's fact-checking. And that means that Chuck Schumer, who I guess is the one I think is the one standing in the way, it has to be done in Congress under the auspices of Congress. So it is on par and they can pay for it. I've figured that out. It's cheap. You know, assess each Democratic office, leadership offices, committees. You can, you know, there's policy and steering committees that could pay for this and, you know, like give him five staff. And then they can also get a permanent room in the Capitol, or a senator could give up their hideaway. And it has to be the same time, just the same thing in the same cycle, not in place of the weekly briefings that Schumer gives or Jeffries gives, but and then they bring in this, you know, shadow cabinet, people's cabinet that Ken Martin mentioned a long time ago and now since has forgotten about. You know, they could be the area's expertise. Democrats aren't doing that. And the fact that they aren't means they are in real disarray, or there might be some people who are complicit. Maybe Chuck Schumer is just too immersed in that old New York stuff with Trump. There's old pictures. Our friend Don Winslow was putting on Twitter of Schumer, you know, attending when he was like a assemblyman or something, attending, you know, birthday party of Roy Cohn, you know, Trump's guy. So the fact that Democrats are not getting it together at the most basic levels is very disturbing to me. And that's the thing that bothers me every day. And they're talking about having, you know, bringing all the big consultants and saying, how can we spend money? And the thing is, that's not how you run a campaign. And that's what we're in. First, you figure out what is it going to take? What do we need to say and do to reach these people? What is our message? And then you put together your tactics. Okay, how do we get that message out? You devise the tactics, like I just laid out about the daily press briefing is one of them. You do that, and then you figure out how much it's going to cost you to do it. And that's when you put in, you know, that's your budget. And then when you need the money, and that's when you develop your fundraising plan. And they're so used to these guys that, you know, the kickback culture with political consultants, they're so used to this that that's their go-to. Give me several million dollars. I mean, anybody can go into a congressional campaign where the guy's a millionaire and, you know, multimillionaire and spend $1 million on a campaign. As of 2019, the average successful House campaign was $2 million. Anybody can do that. And I feel the same way about the guys that go in and find rich guys that want to be spoilers in a presidential campaign because they can fund it themselves. You're not a campaign strategist if that's the only way you can do it. A good campaign strategist puts together the plan. You'd get that research first. Research, raw data. Even if it's finding out, you know, how big this guy's mortgage is. Do they own a boat? Do they, you know, what's their vote? Did they vote every year? All the stuff that you do for a research, and the list is long. That is the first thing you do. That helps you find your message and your theme, which can be two different things. That is where you put together your campaign plan. That is when you know what you have to say and who you need to reach. And then again, your tactics. Okay, what are those tactics going to cost? When are we going to need it? This is our budget. Now we plug in fundraising. Nobody does that anymore. Yeah. Nobody.
It's really infuriating. And I've been vocal about it. And I just, you know, I want to be clear here. It's not that I'm anti-Democrat. I'm not. But I'm also very concerned with what they're not doing and what they're not saying. And it's just upsetting to me. And what really irritates me is when people on social media, you know, some guy said to me the other day, I take umbrage with, you know, you're criticizing the Democrats because Republicans are so awful. It's like, yes,
you're
I know they're awful.
You're not criticizing, you're critiquing. No. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, with anything, I mean, I always go to that sports analogy, which I am not a sports person, but every big team is going to watch what they did. And they're going to say, this worked, this didn't, we've got to fix this and we've got to fix that. It's not bashing. It's just going over and analyzing what worked. And if it didn't work, don't do it anymore. And hey, let's try this strategy and let's try that strategy. And we are no longer in what we used to call the normal times, or what we call the normal times now, because we're not
the before
not
times.
Normal.
Yeah,
the before times. But anyway, we have to take a quick break and we will be back after this message. Hey, real quick, this is Kimberly. If you're enjoying this conversation, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the different tiers. Choose one and be a patron today. Thanks in advance. Okay, we're back. You know what I want to ask you about? Because you were mentioning earlier these people from MAGA that, you know, you just need a slim margin. So this whole thing with Iran, Especially, did you see, I imagine you saw the Tucker Carlson interview with Ted Cruz.
I heard about it. I did not see it.
Oh, it was great because Ted Cruz was just, he's such a fucking asshole. I mean, I hate both of them.
Yes.
But, you know, this is not, this, just in case anyone is confused, I hate Tucker Carlson too. He's a fucking asshole. But he was going after Ted Cruz and he was like, you know, okay, well, what is the population of Iran or Tehran or whatever it was? And Ted Cruz didn't know. And so Tucker's kind of looking at him with that face, like the dog that turns his head to the side. And he's like, you don't know the population? You know, you want to go after them and you don't even know the population? You don't even know anything about, you know, and he was just kind of intentionally poking at Ted Cruz. And mm-hmm. and he got him. He destroyed him. And I don't like to use that word destroy, but he did. So what we're seeing here is a split in the Republican Party about this idea, you know, okay, these people, like you said, they voted for immigrants to be stuffed into vans, even though it's not all illegal immigrants, that they're okay with. But the mm-hmm. idea of these wars, and so you've got people like Steve Bannon, the whole America First side, you know, taking out the oligarchs, at least the tech oligarchs. Those people are all anti-war. And so do you think, I mean, what do you think about this? Do you think it's going to be a really big problem? Do you think, how far do you think this is going to go? And I mean, you know, with Donald Trump, we're going to talk about him in a minute, his cognitive issues. But I mean, do you think this, what do you think is happening here with Iran?
I always think that it's something other than what is on the surface. Right. We know how these guys operate. We know they don't really give a crap about anything other than their own power, influence, and money. I suspect Steve Bannon just needed to do something to stand out because he had kind of faded. So that's why he goes up against Elon Musk. He also right. doesn't want Musk and those guys to get the money. He wants in on it. So trust me, the minute what Steve Bannon wants them to do is say, okay, how do we shut Steve Bannon up? Well, we roll him into the big money thing that because, you know, he wants the money and then mm-hmm. he'll shut up. With Tucker Carlson, it's that plus a voice and power. Mm-hmm. Remember, Tucker has been fired by all three cable nets. I think that's why he went nuts. I used to be on Crossfire with him when he was one of the co-hosts, and he was not like this. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of got that Megyn Kelly manic bitterness. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much money they have. They were brought down, and so they're just going to lash out at everybody.
Yeah.
So with Tucker, it's that. Tucker, I think, is more dangerous than Steve Bannon.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I get that. I do get that.
Yeah.
Although he recently said that Fox News was lying to elderly people.
Yeah.
So there, I mean, he's wow. angry, obviously, at Fox yeah. News.
Well, Fox News might not be serving the agenda of these guys. You know, maybe they yeah. want a different network. You know, I'd like to see one on our side, like Mark Cuban, take all these reporters who are getting fired or pushed out of the cable nets and the big networks and then open the door for a few others to leave. I think then there could be a mass walkout and then bring in, you know, independent journalists, everything, and start something new. And have it be multi-platform. So these guys are all about the next step up and what they can get out of it. And it's egos. But with Tucker, it's a deep bitterness. Like I said, like with Megyn Kelly, where they've completely sold their souls and they spew stuff for an agenda that is to serve them. It's not what they really believe. I know Megyn Kelly doesn't believe a word that comes out of her mouth. The same thing with Greg Kelly at Newsmax. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a Democrat. I used to know him quite well when he was at Fox News. But he keeps getting pushed out of jobs. The local Fox thing that he had in New York, he got pushed out of that. That was a really strange thing. And then he got married real quickly. And he said he had something else lined up, but that was unemployed for a couple of years. And this was after the whole, you know, rape allegation thing, but he's got a powerful daddy, mm-hmm. you know, and so his powerful dad could hire him, Ken Sunshine, the top PR guy in the country, to clean some of this stuff up. So, you know, Newsmax hires these like sexual predators, guys that get Me Too'd out of things, and gives them a job. And mm-hmm. so they it's kind of like with Trump. You hire people who have nowhere else to go or can't get within a mile of these jobs, completely unqualified people who are already criminals, and then you pardon them, and then they become your flying monkeys. They owe you. And, And here's the thing, Kimberly. Once you commit a crime for Trump or do something completely unethical and horrible, he owns you. Mm-hmm. And people do these things because they think, well, I'll get a pardon. Mm-hmm. And then that means they will commit crime after crime after crime. I've put out things about, you know, these ICE agents better be careful because they are real confident mm-hmm. and they're doing things that are illegal and unconstitutional, as if there will never be a price to pay. And maybe there won't be. Maybe mm-hmm. maybe we're done as mm-hmm. as a country. But if we ever do get something close to we're winning, you know, there will be accountability. And then, like in the Nuremberg trials, I was just following orders, doesn't work. So mm-hmm. we have to focus on letting these people know that that's not going to work. These orders are illegal and unconstitutional, and you will be held accountable if we are able to defeat you. So you better hope that we're not able to.
Yeah. You know, I kind of also now want to talk about Donald's cognitive issues. And we saw before, I'm just going to keep bringing this up, but we saw before the election, he was going on about Arnold Palmer's massively big penis. And then he was jerking off a microphone. And it was literally like a week or two, maybe, or days before the election.
And, he wasn't jerking off the microphone. He was giving it a blowjob, if I recall. I just think that's just an important detail.
Performing fellatio on the microphone.
Yeah.
But what that tells me is that, you know, I mean, we see people who are either they've got dementia or Alzheimer's or the start of it, and they become sexually inappropriate. So obviously Donald has spent a lifetime being sexually inappropriate, but not in the way that he was when he was younger in 2016, he would have never gone off talking about the size of Arnold Palmer's dick. So he has lost a lot of what he had, when he first came down that escalator. There's physical and cognitive decline that we can see. There's all this talk about, you know, him having a catheter. He's either got, you know, there's something at the back of his legs on the bottom. There was a picture of him that showed something is underneath those pants and around his legs. Some people think it's piss bags. Some people think it's braces because he has a hard time walking. Regardless of what it actually is, it implies that he is having a difficult time. Now, we both know that you can go on for years and years and years and be really unhealthy. You can be old and unhealthy for years and years and years. But my question to you is, since he is in such a bad way, and I have said, you know, prior to Joe Biden dropping out last year, I thought, okay, if Trump gets in or if Biden gets in, I don't know if either one of them is going to last that 4 years. So I just didn't have faith that they would be around. And, you know, with Donald Trump, if he goes, if he, you know, dies of natural causes in the midst of his term, it will be J.D.
Are you doing
Vance.
Air quotes with natural?
You know what I mean?
You know, because you know Putin. Yeah.
Yes. But so it would be J.D. Vance. And there's a couple of different camps in what happens if we have the president J.D. Vance. So I'm just going to say two, maybe you have a third or fourth. I just want to see your take on this. So there's the idea that if J.D. Vance gets in, he's so unpopular. Yes, horrible things are going to happen, but it's going to remain that we've got this big resistance and, you know, we're going to kill it in the midterms, or we're going to get, you know, 2028, whatever, providing that the elections are, I don't know, trustworthy. And then there's the other side of it where J.D. Vance is kind of going to calm down some of these independents who hate Donald Trump. Maybe they just hate Donald Trump. It's like when Joe Biden ran in 2020, there was all these never Trumpers who was like, I just can't fucking take him. So I'll vote for, you know, the centrist white guy. And the man, you know, he's the older man with the gray hair. He looks like grandfather. That's what we're comfortable with. I'm just going to go with that, or I'm not going to vote at all. So in the case of J.D. Vance, though, he's going to be backed by all the techno bro-crats, whatever. They've got their agenda. We know what it is. We know it's awful. Project 2025, all of it. So he's going, you know, if he were to be the president before, you know, 2028, How do you think that works out? Do you think it benefits democracy, or do you think it's more of a threat?
I think he's awful. He's horrible. And everything you're saying is true. But if he doesn't get the backing of the people, if he's unlikable, which he is, you can't fix that. And he'll have a problem, is what I think. We need to go after the tech bros harder. They are the big threat. I have a theory that when Trump, you know, Trump's cognitive decline is real. He's a drug addict. His physical decline is real. I don't think the sexual stuff is because of that. I just think he gets a kick out of showing how far he can go. He likes to show off, you know, just like Putin does. Putin showed off in, what was it, 2017, 2018, when he brought over all these Republican senators on the 4th of July. He was showing off to the world. I think Trump, it's the whole, I could stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot someone and I wouldn't lose supporters. It's that type of a thing. Trump is as deranged as he's always been, but yeah, cognitively, physically, he's in bad shape. Now, the deal was that, Putin got him in 2016. The whole thing was Ukraine, 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 as we know. And then in 2020, it was harder to cheat because of the paper mailed in ballots, hence the because of the pandemic, hence their panic at the end where they had Louis DeJoy. Literally, they were ripping mailboxes out of black neighborhoods and heavily Democratic neighborhoods to prevent people from getting to their mail-in ballots. And then they really panicked and were dismantling $2 million a piece mail sorting machines to try and do anything because those paper ballots were a problem. And then in 2024, they're like, okay, since we don't want that to happen again, so we're going to enlist Elon Musk's help. And Elon says, okay, what do I get out of it? So Elon Musk, you know, the Doge thing, he wants all the contracts and he wanted to dismantle the federal agencies investigating the crimes of his companies. So he gets that. So he had to get something out of it. And again, all Putin wants is Ukraine. The only thing that has mattered to Putin is Ukraine. In 2016, at the RNC convention, at the platform committee meetings, they have all these different committees that separate out to put together the Republican platform. The only platform item that the Trump campaign got involved in was Ukraine. And that's when the first time these guys took a run at me when I wrote about it, USA Today, that really was they really went after me on that one. And that's then the FBI knew about that. That was part of a whole different story. So that's a different story. So the only thing that matters is Ukraine to Putin. So he doesn't care what Elon Musk gets. There's certain things he needs Trump to do in order to, you know, be a dictator here so that he can deliver Ukraine. I believe that when, you know, Trump is just golfing and hanging out and making all this money on his meme coins and all this, you know, pretend money where he's becoming a billionaire and oligarch himself. The deal was you let the oligarchs get their way and Trump golfs. And somehow Trump was not informed, did not know. If anybody in our IC intel community knew about it, they didn't tell him, rightfully so, did not know about the planned drone strikes on Putin's attack planes that Zelensky had. It was brilliant. The whole thing cost $47,000 on these drones. They were $500 a piece. How come Trump didn't know about this when Ukraine owes us and is our ally? And I think that, you know, and it really harmed Putin's chances. I think that Putin was furious about that because, Kimberly, right after that was when Elon Musk suddenly decided that he really truly cared about federal spending. He didn't care about federal spending. And so he launched this. That's when he started throwing this, you know, Trump was on the Epstein plane, Trump, and all of this sort of thing. So now Trump had a real problem because this was Elon Musk and Putin saying, we're done with you and we're going to, you know, you're going to be done and we're going to get J.D. Vance in there.
Interesting.
And so this was their way of letting him know he had screwed up because he did not know, because Zelensky outsmarted him. He was right not to tell Trump. He knew what Trump was. Everybody knows in the world knows what Trump is, you know, that he's in Putin's pocket, except people in this country, I guess, and our media. So we saw that war going and people said, oh, it's just two little girls and two egos. No, it was much more than that. Never think that's all it is with these guys. And remember, then there was some kind of a powwow and Elon Musk backs off and Trump immediately goes in and launches this attack in California, which is part of it. I think he was showing off to Putin, yes, I can do the job. Please don't fire me, boss. See, I can be a tough dictator. like you. So something happened. These events are connected. I think they always have these things in the queue ready to go when they need them. But I think the timing of this attack on California, I don't think that the tanks in DC had anything to do with that because they planned that before.
Right,
but that might not have, that might have been for a different purpose that didn't actually happen. But the California thing, right after he and Elon made up, this all was just, there are no coincidences with these people. And this is what I do. I connect dots, you know, I kind of take the strategy and move it backwards. So I think that's what this was about. And I think the rest of the world knows, which is why, like at the G7, they're embracing Zelensky, putting him right in the spot. You know, they're doing, the rest of the world knows we are the ones who are stupid and our media is keeping us stupid.
Yes.
So anyway, that was a long explanation, but that's what I do. I connect the dots, and that's what I think was happening.
Okay. So the last question I have now, obviously I started the beginning of the show saying I feel a little more comfortable talking about politics. There's two reasons. Number one, it's kind of like I'm watching what's happening, although I'm not sure what to think anymore. But, you know, part of this was I was concerned because I thought my mother might be leaving the country. And if she did leave the country to go live somewhere else, that, you know, if I wanted to visit her, I might have problems getting back home. So that was one of my issues for not knowing what to do with this podcast. It was certainly not the only one. I'm slowly kind of coming back to the idea of, all right, you know, the format that I've been used to and that everybody's used to, just what we're doing now, talking about politics. But all that said, I mean, this is a specifically good question for you because you were one of those people that were targeted and you were absolutely living through some really frightening experiences in 2016. So now as a vocal resistor, how are you feeling about speaking up? Because we are seeing elected officials and reporters and journalists being arrested, being roughed up. Examples being made of them. So, you know, how do you feel being so vocal?
I feel like I've been going through this for over 10 years, starting in October of 2015. And my story became so bizarre. I felt like I couldn't even tell people about it because it was like a bad John Grisham novel. You know, the FBI did get involved. And then when Trump won, the investigation was closed. And I was convinced that we were getting ready for indictments. This was the hacking of my email. You know, there was one night when I was living in New York. It's one of the reasons I left New York, plus my dad was sick. You know, I get a late night call saying Trump has guys in Queens that might be on their way over to harm you.
Oh, my God.
It's 11:30 at night. So I have, I'm not a tinfoil hat conspiracist or anything. I just have more information than other people do. And it's firsthand information, just like what was going on, like at Fox and MSNBC and CNN. I was there all the time over the course of 17 years. Plus I was, you know, I was on those networks approximately 2000 times. So I just love it when people give me, you know, tell me what's going on at these networks. And I just need to understand Fox. It's like, I've been there a lot in the DC studios, in the New York studios. I know these people. I'm very well aware of what happens. And it was frightening to me that one of 15 primary candidates could pick up the phone and have me banned from both CNN and Fox. And also Joe Scarborough would not let me, when Corey Lewandowski called in and defamed me and made a claim about me that was false, Joe would not let me on the show to defend myself. Joe would not even read a statement saying Sherry Jacobus disputes this. And I could prove it too. I said, I have the communication from these people trying to hire me. They just flat out refused. And Joe and I had been friends. I had known Joan Scarborough since he was a freshman member of Congress, actually since before they got sworn in. And I used to be on his old show, Scarborough Country. So, you know, and I saw, you know, Chris Cuomo, who I was friendly with, used to do his show. And yeah, you know, one morning, you know, after I was on his early morning show, he's like, let's go get a plate of eggs because he wanted to pick my brain. He wanted my advice on how he could beat Morning Joe in the ratings. He was given up on Fox and Friends. He says, you've done all three networks. You know, these people you've been around. And so, you know, this was the relationship I had with these people. And then what happened to me was just, you know, astonishing. And it almost didn't sound real. You know, I was hacked. I was catfished. You know, they hired somebody. Actually, the firm was Holland and Knight. It was Trump's firm in Miami. And then they were doing the transition up here, and a woman that I'd been in a beach house with 30 years before, hadn't been in contact with. She did crisis communications at these firms for rich people who were being sued for defamation or, you know, that sort of thing. And she lied to me and tried to get in touch, asked and wanted to help me, and then pretended she didn't know that I was suing Trump, you know, all of this stuff. Then it became clear that she was operating on information from my hacked email. She didn't know that, but whomever gave her, gave that firm their instructions, was using information from my hacked emails. Same with J.D. Gordon on the Ukraine stuff with USA Today. It looks like he got it from Michael Caputo. So Michael Caputo, Roger Stone were involved in all of that. And so these were data points that the FBI had. There were three data points pointing to Trump people having my email hacked, actually really four. They were just doing this with abandon and getting away with it, and they didn't care, and defaming and getting people kicked off TV. It used to be, Kimberly, that if a campaign were to make that kind of a call to a network, TV network, they would be like, hell no. And they'd advertise that. They say this campaign actually tried to tell us who we could and couldn't have on. So I knew early on that there was something very, very wrong when it came to Donald Trump and the media and deals he had cut with people in New York all these years, all law enforcement. I mean, he knew. And this guy was a thug. He was a mobster. And it was terrifying. And I was afraid, very afraid. I felt like I was being watched and followed. I knew I'd been hacked. There's a whole long list of things that happened. Now the rest of the country is going through it. Maybe if they'd listened to me. But here's the thing. I was a nobody. It didn't matter if it just happened to Sherry Jacobus. You know, Jake Tapper was told all about this. We were kind of back and forth. They didn't care. Everybody, these people that you think are good guys, a lot of these people get in these positions in media by being not great people. They mm-hmm. may seem really nice, but a lot of them are sellouts, users, and they know how to smile on camera. So it's kind of a dirty business, and we tend to fall in love with these people, you know,
yeah.
And we shouldn't.
No.
And when you see how they sell out, when you look at somebody like a Megyn Kelly, who I used to be friends with, who I liked, I thought she was smart, relatively normal and okay, certainly ambitious. Now I question a lot about her. When I watched the movie Bombshell, I'm not quite sure. You know, she claims that she didn't do anything with Roger Ailes. I don't know now if that's true. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying she did, but I find it hard to believe. Now that we know what she really is, it's not something I can take at face value that, you know, these other women at Fox News could only make it if they sucked Roger Ailes' dick, but she didn't.
But I mean, right now, being vocal.
I just went off on a lot of different issues, I realize, but,
but I mean,
it's
you've
all
been
connected
through
to
it.
What happened. Yeah, I've been
you've
through
been
it.
Through
yeah.
it. So, and so yes, now there is this whole new, it was different in his first term because they weren't disappearing people. They weren't, I mean, obviously they were doing other things, but they weren't doing it. So, I mean, like now as a vocal resistor, you've got a podcast, you've got obviously a big social media imprint or fingerprint, whatever it's called, but do you feel okay? I mean, you're still doing it. So clearly you feel safe enough to keep doing it. But I mean, how does it make you
feel
inside? Yeah.
I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe. I was told recently by somebody, and this was secondhand, somebody who was told this by the woman it happened to, who always went after Trump, tangled with him in New York, you know, years ago, when Trump was elected, I think this time, and before he cleared out the FBI, she got a visit from the FBI, and they said Trump has a kill list, an assassin list, and you're on it. So they were telling her to be careful. Basically, they couldn't help her. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing this secondhand, and so I believe it. I don't think that's a stretch at all for somebody like him. Mm-hmm. And that's why people have to stop acting like this is tinfoil hat conspiracy stuff. It's like, not if you know about him, not if you remember all the stuff. Mm-hmm. This you should assume that he does. So I assume that if, you know, he would eventually get to me anyway. I still think that sunlight is a disinfectant. Mm-hmm. When you are being attacked, you don't run down a dark alley. You run out into a well-lit street and you mm-hmm. start screaming.
Yeah.
That's why I think we have to be very open about this stuff when it's happening. So that actually when it does happen and somebody steps up, they don't say, oh, that's just tinfoil hat conspiracy.
Right.
We should be well beyond that. Do I think that Ivana Trump died naturally falling down the stairs? No.
No.
The fall was unnatural. And there were the two goons, that father, son, longtime years goons of Trump's. I forget their name, but they were at the townhouse right after that, going in, carrying stuff out. I think they've done a lot of dirty work for Trump. And it was right before her NDA was expiring.
Wow.
I think that does it mean that everything you suspect or people claim is true? No, but I think most of it is.
Yeah.
And
assume
just,
the worst. Always assume the worst.
Yeah, especially if there's no reason to doubt it. I mean, if someone is explaining something to you and the dots are connecting, listen to it. And Trump counts on that not being the case. He counts on everybody just being written off as silly. And that's because our media protected the public from a lot of this stuff. But we do get played. And that's why I say, like with a Steve Bannon and a Tucker Carlson, never think, never believe that this is really, that it's about what they're saying. There is always an underlying agenda, just like with Trump. There are no coincidences.
Yeah.
Stop thinking that Elon Musk gives a rat's behind about our budget and our spending and our debt. You know, Trump has increased our debt more than any other president, more than all presidents combined.
Mm-hmm.
Elon Musk does not care about that. So when Elon Musk all of a sudden launches this war against Trump, right after Trump failed the real boss, Vladimir Putin, you know, it's important that we are, I guess, sophisticated enough and realistic enough to understand there's a connection. We should be years past a point where we call this stuff tinfoil hat conspiracy, where you have to prove it. It's like, well, you know, when the FBI does an investigation, for example, they have to go on some assumptions that make sense. You look at the data. You look at the data, you look at their research, you see what dots connect. You go down different paths to see what to see if you can keep going down that path. And so if you go down one path and you hit a brick wall because things don't make sense, or you come up with information that says, well, this can't be true, fine. But you don't not go down certain paths because in advance you decide that it just sounds too silly.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking to the smart people who understand this stuff, they get it. They listen to you because they know it happens. And the FBI agents in New York were well aware of Donald Trump. And they were, you know, and they were telling me things like, if you let us know everything, we can't tell you everything. You know, if there's going to be a grand jury, we can't tell you unless, you know, you might be called in front of it. We would let you know. And they said, we will let you know if you or family, your family members are in danger. If we come across, cause I was being targeted and followed and somebody, and they had my email and all kinds of stuff, and have an old friend from 30 years ago who's an absolute piece of garbage, pretending to reconnect to try and confirm information from my hacked emails that they had to do with my whereabouts because they were kind of going to try and do a venue change in the lawsuit. So, it wasn't anything nefarious. And the FBI had all this. And I knew that when they had gotten from her, because she's not a lawyer. And here's the other thing, and I'm just going to say this because it needs to be said. Michael Cohen would likely have been the person to give that law firm their instructions. This was early on when Trump didn't have the big army.
Mm-hmm.
So, Michael Cohen served his time for one of his crimes, I guess. And that's only because Trump went after him. But there's a whole lot that Michael Cohen has done to hurt a lot of people, including me. And I do not think of him as a hero. I resent that he's been given a big platform and makes all this money and everybody treats him like he's one of us now. He's not. There is a lot that he's done, a whole lot. And I know it. And other people who have been Trump victims know it. So the longer this era of Trump goes on, the more we get these situations where you have people who are, you know, grifters and kind of, you know, have different agendas, and it's not all nice, neat, and clean. And we have to be careful and we have to be discerning. And what I don't want is people coming to me saying, well, we forgive him because he did his time. Not to me, not to the other people he hurt.
Right.
And unless that's been made public and people understand that he did it and what he did, he would have been the one that would have been taking information from my hacked emails and giving it to the law firm is saying, find out her whereabouts, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And that's just one of many. And there are other people who have contacted me privately who there's stuff that he's done. So, we still do that. We make heroes out of people that we think seem so nice and sincere, and we need to be doing better.
Yes, we do. There's so many things that need to be cleaned up, and we're not going to clean it up all today, but we're in a really weird, fucking uncomfortable place. And I hope that what's happening right now, when we look at 2018 and, you know, we had a big turnout in the 2018 elections, And I know on one of your videos, you talked about it is harder to rig a midterm than it is a presidential race.
Yeah.
That's why they'll
cancel them. That's why they're going to cancel them.
I'm not so sure they're going to do it. We'll see. I wouldn't put it past them. I'm open for anything, but we'll see what happens. But I think the benefit would be, obviously, we could really do some good in 2026 if elections are held and if they are not suppressed to the point where people, because I think that the turnout's going to be bigger than it was in 2018. And that was mm-hmm. a general election size turnout. So
yeah.
On that note, I got to wrap things up here. But as per usual, it's always good to talk to you. And of course, we always have to talk about Sex and the City because that's the important stuff.
And just like that.
Yeah. And just like that. Your input is very valuable and always so interesting. And you do have that kind of special, you have a unique take on this where you're not just somebody like me. Somebody like listening, you've had actual experience. So it's always
I've been targeted standing.
Yes, you've been
Fifth
targeted.
Avenue,
yeah. So it's always good to hear your take on things. So of course, as usual, tell us where to find you.
Well, on Twitter, on Blue Sky, and I have my podcast on Patreon, Politics with Sherry Jacobus. And a few months ago, I started a YouTube channel, which I hope you will all subscribe to. It's free, and it's called Politics with Sherry Jacobus as well. I do videos almost on a daily basis, and it's growing, and it's fun, and nobody can tell me what to say, and that's the really good part.
Yes, I know all about that. Well, Sherry, it's just been great talking to you as usual, and I'm sure we're going to talk again. So thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Mojiela Wodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
I'm Brian Karam, and I've spent decades covering politics. Now I'm taking you behind the scenes, one interview at a time.
Join us as each week Brian confronts the issues that matter, posing the questions you wish you could ask. No filter, no agenda, just the truth.
We're not here for sound bites. We're here for substance. Join me, Brian Karam, every week as we cut through the noise and get straight to it. This is Just Ask the Question. Curiosity will lead us to the facts.
Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, when you want answers, all you have to do is just ask the question.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.